Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy. Committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, September the 20th. Happy to talk with John Leo once again this hour. Frequent guest here on Wisconsin Public Radio, former syndicated columnist whose column ran in U.S. News and World Report for the past 17 years or so and was syndicated to many newspapers, including the Wisconsin State Journal. He recently retired from that daily grind and is now busy writing for a new website, a new effort that's being formally launched at a shindig tonight. He is now editor of MindingTheCampus.com, and we'll talk about what the mission of this MindingTheCampus.com is all about this hour. He says that the country's institutions of higher education are detached from the rest of the country and are entrenched in politics and political ideology and should get back to the core of higher education. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to talk about politics and higher education during this hour. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Some of the things we'll be talking about this hour is whether political correctness is interfering with a good college education, whether you think there is a political bias in today's universities and university faculties, and whether that's a problem for this state or this country. Are the universities failing our students by being entrenched in this political ideology rather than teaching some of the basics? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. John Leo, editor of MindingTheCampus.com, syndicated columnist, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and Intercollegiate Studies Institute, joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
So, MindingTheCampus.com, it's been around a little while, but you're formally launching this effort. And what is the mission of MindingTheCampus.com? What is it that you want to accomplish?
We want to inform the public about what's going on in the universities, and we want to engage in the conversation about what to do about the universities. I commonly get in conversation with friends and acquaintances who ask, what is the mission of Minding the Campus? And I say, reforming the universities. And they use this puzzled look on their face, like, what do you mean reform? What needs reforming? And it seems to me that these people who have children going to college spend up to $200,000 and never kick the tires before buying. They don't know what they're buying. And often what they're buying for their sons and daughters is a very dangerous, politicized education that goes without question because the press doesn't raise these issues. So we want to raise the issues and talk to our adversaries and neutrals about what can be done to make the campus better.
Yeah. When you say that they are buying a dangerous, politicized education, talk a little bit more about that. What does that mean, a liberal education?
Well, it seems to me that the 60s generation of professors, when we went from 160,000 professors to 500,000, that a lot of the countercultural people moved in with an ethic that they frankly described as transformational. In other words, they didn't just want extra courses on multicultural subjects. They wanted to change and it turned out to subvert the traditional curriculum. And they've been very successful at that. So you have a very different curriculum now in which, for one example, if you're interested in English literature, it becomes a very dicey thing to study English at a university because English courses no longer focus on literature. They focus on critical theory, And very often the allegedly political outlook of books that are fed to literature courses. So what you have now is people who love literature don't even bother going to English courses because it's all a swamp of critical theory and anti-Western thought. So
yeah, well, John Leo, what evidence is there that that this is run amok? That this is what all universities
well,
are
I
doing?
Well, I think there's a potential conflict between true liberals and the academic far left. These two groups have sort of been in tandem. But what we think is not that the campus is too liberal, but that it's not liberal at all. Now, you take the traditional values that liberals in America espouse, free speech, openness, tolerance, and a non-politicized curriculum. And all of those things have been introduced by the academic far left. The free speech is in such danger on the college campus that civil liberties lawyer Harvey Silvergate, who is co-founder of FIRE, a free speech organization, and a board member of the ACLU, said the only people in America who are less free to speak than college students here are people in state and federal prisons. The speech codes, the stolen newspapers, the canceled speakers, the use of sexual harassment and behavioral codes to shut people up and intimidate them, often with very broad forbidding language such as you're not allowed to hurt feelings or disparage other people's ideas. Well, of course, if you can't disparage anybody's idea, you can't have a true debate. Here in New York, even Mayor Bloomberg got into the fight when Columbia, which has a terrible anti-free speech record, had canceled four speakers in a row. The mayor said, Bollinger, the president, has got to get a hold of his university. Well, now they're leaning the other way. After great pressure, they're allowing a couple of those speakers back in. But the record of the universities on free speech and open debate is appalling. There simply is very little debate on the college campuses because the lack of tolerance for dissent is so high. So I think on the free speech issue, the liberals, the true liberals, have been silent about this. They have not spoken up. And on politicized courses, they haven't spoken up. I think the fact that we have been living in very conservative times has made true liberals hesitant to complain about what the far left has done to the campus. And it's true that reporters don't report it either, so these baffled parents who don't kick the tires have no idea what they're exposing their kids to.
Our guest is John Leo, talking about his new effort as editor of MindingTheCampus.com, saying a political ideology has taken over most universities when they should be talking about higher education. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, September the 20th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. And after 4, you can join Ben for his September open line. You are invited to call in with program ideas, guest suggestions, and feedback. At Issue with Ben Marins, an open line today after 4. We're talking with John Leo. He's editor of MindingTheCampus.com. He's also a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and at the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. MindingTheCampus.com is a website that is an mission or an effort to try to take political correctness out of higher education and to encourage debate on college campuses and a diversity of opinions on college campuses. He says that the country's colleges, institutions of higher education are detached from the rest of the country and are worried more about politics than higher education. We see things like controversial speakers who might offend somebody being disinvited to speak on campuses or not invited in the first place. We wonder if you, too, think that there's a problem of political bias on universities. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And let me ask you about a column that you posted today on, or yesterday on MindingTheCampus.com. You point to this new report that's out that says that our college campuses are doing a pretty bad job teaching students about history. Is this an example of that colleges aren't doing what they should be doing, and they're worried more about whatever multiculturalism?
Well, that's the point of the report. Mm-hmm. I should say that I have a connection to the host organization, Intercollegiate Studies Institute. They did this report last year, and they want to do it every year to show how the colleges are failing to educate students about American civics and history. Their argument, which is a sound one, I think, is that you cannot prepare the next generation to be good citizens if they don't know anything about how the government works, how politics works, and what the history of this country is. Now, the universities have a reply. They say, well, that's the high school and grammar school's job. But ISI actually tracked the increase in civic knowledge. It goes up a couple of points every year until you get to college, and then it goes down. And they found that the most ignorant, they took 25 elite colleges and 25 lesser-known colleges picked at random. And they had a perfectly neutral source do the survey, the Democracy Center at the University of Connecticut. And they found oddly, that the more elite a college is, the more it climbs to the top of the U.S. News ranking, the worse its students will perform on a test of basic knowledge about our history and civics. The highest mark for any school was Harvard, 69 point something or other, which is a kind of D+. So that all 50 colleges had an appalling record of their students knowing things like which battle ended the Revolutionary War, what did Martin Luther King stand for, what were the Lincoln-Douglas debates about. There were multiple choice questions, and the students did very poorly. So what ISI is saying is that we have to do a better job in preparing this generation to take over.
Yeah. Do you think there's a connection between the history scores, the civic scores, and this problem of a lack of intellectual diversity on campuses?
Maybe there's some connection. Now, one of the factors here is that colleges have never thought that teaching civics is part of their job, and they do teach American history. That has become unusually politicized with almost all of the new hires having to do with race and gender, and very few having to do with all the rest of American history. That's the way things go on the campus. So the colleges are not aware that it's their job, and they tend to treat the curriculum as a kind of vast smorgasbord, and that the students are diners who make their own choices, and it's not the cafeteria's fault if the students don't pick the right food.
Let's take some calls. Paul in La Crosse, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think this is just terrible. I love your defense of liberals, John, when talking about how their agenda was hijacked by the extreme left. As a liberal, I know people, not you, of course, but other conservatives have been calling me a traitor for the last 4 years because of my views on the war. I mean, talk about having an open and frank discussion. I don't think we have that either. But the other thing is that right now, I think the thing that really drives you nuts is that in literature classes, we're no longer studying dead white men exclusively. We have found that not only can people of color read, but they can also write. And it's kind of important to include literature from around the world instead of just studying guys who could barely write English, 300 years ago. That's one point. The other thing is that the campuses have been polluted by women. They now comprise a majority at campuses. And so it's no longer just a bunch of preppy guys in ties and beanies walking around the quad trying to smoke pipes. It has become much more diversified and, frankly, much better than it was 50, 60 years ago.
So when you said polluted, you were talking tongue-in-cheek, Paul. John Lee.
Let me talk about the literature. It's perfectly legitimate to expand the curriculum of literature. We don't expect people to be studying only white writers. But what's at stake here is the knowledge of our tradition and the characterization of dead white males as somehow representing one point of view. I mean, for heaven's sake, from Plato to Nietzsche, it's a constant argument about the meaning of life. And to cut that off for an increasingly racialized curriculum, you know, it's, as you expand the curriculum, you have to be careful that you don't just teach black books to blacks and Hispanic books to Hispanics, because you feed the identity politics that says nothing outside my tradition is worth reading. Your principle is correct that you have to have a broader curriculum so that people read everything. But the contempt for the Western tradition and the achievements of Western literature and thought are amazing on the college campus. It has become a kind of anti-Western ethic, and I don't think that that's a particularly healthy thing. And there was a young black girl quoted at Michigan saying, why should I read about Lincoln? He was white. That attitude that somehow your tradition is determined by melanin and separatism and America's past racism is just preposterous. And I think you have to be careful not to cut off as you expand the reading list, that you don't disparage the other writers. I have in my bookcase in my office a reader used at Douglas College, which is the old women's college at Rutgers, and it's a freshman introductory reader. And outside of Virginia Woolf, everybody in it is a writer of the left and mostly non-white. Well, I mean, this is a kind of propaganda. I mean, if you want to have an introductory reader to great writers, you don't have to have an extreme bias against moderates, conservatives, and non-political people. That's using the freshman reader for political purposes.
Yeah, we got an email from Scott in Green Bay who says, let's not forget the most ideological department of them all, the business or economics department. They teach one form of business over all others, the profit one. So what about campuses? Most campuses do have business economics. Doesn't that equal out whether there's some more left-leaning departments?
Well, it's a separate thing. I mean, if you're studying techniques to make money in business, you're going to study the free enterprise system as it is. There are some departments, notably the University of Chicago, that push a particular line. But in general, that's not what I'm talking about or I'm interested in. I'm talking about general education, not a specific trade education like business or dentistry. This is a general education for American citizens, and we think it should be broader. I should say here that although my principles are conservative, we are not interested in making the campus more conservative. Mm-hmm. Our interest is in making it more open and to get real debate and honesty and to have non-politicized scholarship. When the flap erupted last week about Erwin Kamerinsky, I think that's how you pronounce his name.
John Leo, let's hold that story until after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. It's newsbreak time, and then we'll continue talking with John Leo, editor of MindingTheCampus.com. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Thursday, September the 20th. We are talking with John Leo this hour, editor of MindingTheCampus.com, which is a website, obviously, and an effort to try to revive intellectual diversity or intellectual pluralism on college campuses. The website says, we hope to foster a new climate of opinion that favors civil and honest engagement of all sides, offering an engaged debate for readers concerned with the state of the modern university. We are talking with him about this effort and what's wrong with college campuses today, and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. Or talk at WPR.org. And just before news time, John Leo, you were saying you're not out to make college campuses in this country more conservative, but you are interested in taking politics out of the equation. You say that there are examples on both sides where, say, maybe somebody's been fired or disinvited to speak on campus because they were controversial or were too far left or too far right.
Right. I started to tell the story of Erwin Kamerinsky, who was a law professor at Duke, who a couple of weeks ago was named to be the new dean of a new law school at the University of California at Irvine. Well, he was named on September 4th, and 6 days later he was fired. And the chancellor of the university said, I didn't realize that conservatives were so irritated with him. Well, we got that news at 4 o'clock. By 4:30, I had batted out an editorial defending Kamerinsky, saying, look, you guys didn't have to hire him, but once you hire him, you cannot fire him because he has the wrong politics or because you're getting pressured from the right. We also pointed out that Kamerinsky was an honest man. He has left opinions, some far left opinions, states them clearly in op-ed pieces, doesn't fudge, and doesn't politicize his classroom. We had letters from conservative law students at Duke saying, this man is fair, absolutely fair. One student said, I wrote a Scalia-esque paper and got an A-plus from him. He doesn't politicize. Well, of course you want to defend a person like that. And a lot of conservatives spoke up in his behalf, saying don't politicize the appointments of professors or deans, left or right. Unfortunately, we had a reverse incident where liberals did not speak up, and that was the cancellation of Larry Summers, a former Clinton cabinet member and former president of Harvard, who was invited to give a keynote speech before the Board of Regents at the University of California, the people who oversee the entire California system. And he was canceled out because feminists had got up a petition saying he was a sexist and a racist. Well, you know, nobody spoke up on behalf of Larry Summers. I mean, it was just crickets. No, total silence from the left on the cancellation of speeches, speakers they don't really like. So I think there's something really wrong there. Either you believe in free speech and you defend it even when your adversaries are canceled out, or you don't believe in free speech and you just want to push your cause.
All right. Rick in La Crosse sent an email wanting you to please ask John Leo about his opinion on Normal Finkelstein, Ward Churchill, or the tasered student at the University of Florida. Are professors losing their jobs and students being tasered representative of a loss of freedom of speech on campus?
Oh, that's a tall order. I'm not sure we have let me say a word about the Ward Churchill case. Mm-hmm. Was he hounded because of his little Eichmann speech? Of course he was. People were really irritated about that. Was he fired because of the little Eichmann speech? And the answer is no. Once the fuss he raised caused people to look at his research, it was appalling. This is a man with a fabricated record, a fabricated identity, who apparently was hired because he was Indian, and now there's some doubt he was ever Indian, who fabricated an entire history of the United States deliberately using smallpox blankets to wipe out Indians. Now, there is simply no evidence for that, except for one case in the French and Indian War by a British officer, and yet he cited many sources that were turned out to be fake. And one of his favorite sources, who he says is an authority in this area, turned out to be himself writing under an assumed name. A college can't allow that. You can't have poisoned scholarship by ideologues pretending to be scholars when they're just writing propaganda. So the cashiering of Ward Churchill is one of those few cases where it's clear that the polluted scholarship made him an undesirable at any college campus.
Lee in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. The host, you earlier asked, what's the evidence that this political correctness is run amok? And to me, it's a little bit like asking, you know, what's the evidence that the sun rises in the east? You can see this. Just open up the homepage of the UW English department. Look at the syllabi. All the readings are from Marxists or neo-Marxists, such as Foucault and Gramsci. So my question is, what's the attraction of Marxism or these recycled Marxism to intellectuals, and why in their syllabi are all the readings from the left, and which represent a kind of a cultural hegemony, one of their favorite words? Why are they afraid to provide students with readings from diverse points of view?
Well, I sort of answered that before. I think that in conservative times, when conservatives seem to be running the entire show in this country, that the two remaining bastions of left thought, Hollywood and the universities, thought that they had to act in more forthright ways to promote the left. And the campus has become so activist, so determined to use every lever they can to force a left outcome, that it has really abandoned its mission. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have formed our website. Again, we don't care whether in an honest and open culture the professors or students turn out left or right, as long as it's honest and there's real debate and no attempt to manipulate. I don't know if I have time for this, but there was a case in Missouri where a female student who was studying to become a social worker was forced to write a letter to the Missouri legislature saying that they should change the law and allow gay adoptions. Well, the issue isn't important. What was important is she had moral and religious objections to that, and the professor forced her to do it anyway. She refused, was brought up on charges, and then when she was faced with the fact that she could never be a social worker if she didn't give in, she gave in, later sued, and won a settlement, small settlement. And the state of Missouri passed a law saying you can't do this. You cannot force students to make political statements they don't believe in. So there is some resistance to the manipulation of students now.
Victor in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, Victor.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Mr. Leo.
Good morning.
Did you look into or check into any of the historically black colleges like Chicago State University, Howard University, Southern, Morehouse, and are they running into the same problem? Because one concern I might have, you have somebody like Ward Connolly, who is definitely staunchly anti-affirmative action, or anybody with a different political point of view, will they have problems on that as well?
Well, I know Ward Connolly. I consider him a friend, and he has put up with such abuse. He's partly black. He's partly everything. He has Asian, Caucasian, all kinds of blood in him. But, of course, that gets him labeled as a black in America. And he has been canceled out in many places, often with no explanation, except that some students don't want to hear him. No, I'm not really familiar with the curricula at historically black colleges, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's as bad as the curriculum at the average historically white college.
Our guest is John Leo. He's a former syndicated columnist for U.S. News and World Report, who is now taking on a lot of other things, including being the editor of MindingTheCampus.com, a website and effort that's officially being launched today. It's an effort to try to diversify campuses. It's to revive intellectual pluralism and the best traditions of liberal education on campuses across the country. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, we'll be talking with the author of the book, Our Own Worst Enemy, asking the right questions about security to protect you, your family, and America. It's coming up after 8. We're talking with John Leo for the rest of this hour, editor of MindingTheCampus.com, who says political ideology has taken over many of the universities in this country when they should be about higher education. And got an email from Colleen in Green Bay who relates this story. When my son was a freshman at UW-Madison, he took a course on multiculturalism through the sociology department. The discussion turned to the plight of the American Indian and how they don't have opportunities, etc. As an enrolled Wisconsin-American Indian who lived on his reservation for 6 years, he pointed out that in his experience, members of his tribe had many opportunities, but that many failed to take advantage of the opportunities. He was jumped on by the instructor and fellow classmates as a traitor to his race. He simply offered his observation, which apparently was politically incorrect. Comments on that, John Leo?
Well, that's an interesting case. Identity politics has suffused the campus to the point where everybody has to reflect the group ideology. You know, they have housing for blacks, housing for Hispanics, housing for every group. And in that house, a kind of uniformity of opinion is presumed in which the wisdom of the tribe is not to be deviated from. So, of course, if he deviates from that and says, we're not all victims all the time, they're going to jump down his throat. Multiculturalism is turning out to be the least tolerant ism ever to descend upon the campus because instead of being celebrating different traditions, it's basically a victimized ideology in which everyone is joined together only by disdain for white and mainstream culture. So it's a poisonous ideology, and I'm glad your son found out about it quickly.
Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Cowboy in Madison. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah. Mr. Leo's got quite an opinion, doesn't he, about multiculturalism and political correctness on university campuses, but I'll make this short. I graduated from a Big Ten university, as a matter of fact, right here in Madison, and I worked there. And although I agree with Mr. Leo about the politics at times, I strongly disagree with his interpretation of whether there is value in breaching the cultural gaps that exist in American culture. And if he's so concerned about liberalism and political correctness, is what they called it during my tenure on campus, taking over college campuses, he should concern himself with the dwindling numbers of minorities that aren't showing up to his quote-unquote liberalism. If they're so liberal, where's the money and where's the funding? Where are the programs and where's the support? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. And John Leo?
Well, I guess the question is, why aren't there more minorities at universities? Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I think one of the problems is that there are more unprepared minorities than there are unprepared whites. Preparation has to begin early in life and at lower grades and lower schools, and it is no service to blacks or other minorities to insert them unprepared at a major university like UW without the correct preparation, because all you can do then is simplify the course so that it's impossible to fail or to have them flunk out and think that either the university is too hard or too prejudiced. So the system is not at fault at the university level, in my opinion. It's at fault in not spending the money and the time to prepare minority students earlier in life and to work with parents to get them interested in education early.
Yeah, but we also hear that minority students who, are here at UW-Madison, for example, feel isolated or, insulted, or they don't see any professors or many other students that are their own color on campus, and so they drop out or go somewhere else.
Well, I'm unsympathetic to the same color argument. I mean, here in New York City, when the immigrants piled into New York City, the Irish and Italians and Swedes and Poles all went to grammar schools where the teachers were basically Jews. They didn't demand that somebody from Sicily be their teacher. They knew that their teachers knew more than they did, and those teachers worked brilliantly to prepare people without being role models. So the role model thing, I think, has been vastly overdone. I think a lot of the feeling of isolation and aloneness has to do with the fact that that the many of them arrive on the campus and are stunned to find that other students are much more prepared than they. And they're at sea. Not only are they a minority in numbers, but many of them cannot keep up with the competition. And I think that's part of the lack of preparation. And they haven't been told about what is expected, and they haven't been tutored.
Jack in Gays Mills is with us now. Hi, Jack.
Yeah, I just like to point out that I wouldn't doubt that there's a lot of liberal college professors trying to liberalize students, but I don't know why the right is worried about that. They're so ineffective. It's just ridiculous. They're so 100% ineffective. The generation coming up is either apathetic or conservative or, you know, just a bunch of lemmings. I mean, so maybe it's true, but
yeah, but
doesn't
so
matter.
What, it doesn't
They're
matter.
So ineffective.
So it's true that a lot of students just learn to tune out teachers who try to propagandize them, because you can't fool people, particularly young people, very long. But still, there are these acid tests being built into the university. Are you familiar with the terms dispositions and social justice? Those have become linguistic sinkholes to keep conservatives and moderates out of certain programs. That's what happened to that woman in Missouri, that they set a test for the correct disposition, which opens the door to judge their politics and to flunk out people who are not on the left. And social justice has become a code word, too, because if you judge people on their social justice, what kind of social justice, then you have to announce what kind of programs you're for. Are you for affirmative action, expanding welfare rolls, whatever? So the political tests are built right in. I mean, it's almost impossible to get to be a social worker if you follow that issue, if you don't have the right disposition or attitude to social justice. So you can keep the door shut to an academic or social worker career if you are a propagandizing teacher. So it's a danger. They're replicating themselves and filling the slots of new professors with people just as ideological as they are. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jack. Rick in Park Falls is with us now. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I could have repeated a lot of my experiences from the Madison campus, but it would, I suppose, be repetitious. My undergraduate degree is from UW-Madison. I'm thinking one of the reasons for what the guest is talking about, and also for the social isolation of black and other minority students, especially at Madison, is because Madison has sacrificed teaching so much to do research that I wasn't even aware that my professors had office hours where students were even invited to go see them outside of class because they were involved in their research. And I wondered how that plugs into this problem your guest is talking about.
Well, I agree with you. I think one of the things we haven't discussed here and that many people don't discuss is that universities have turned into money-grubbing research machines where the name of the game is to attract as much money from the federal government, build a staff, and start new projects, getting new money in, so that teaching itself becomes a kind of lower order, or lower prestige enterprise next to bringing in dough to the university. So that is a real problem.
Yeah. Well, maybe they're bringing in some of that dough because the public dollars are being cut. There is an example in Wisconsin where there are proposals to cut university programs that some Republican lawmakers think are a waste of money because they're too liberal or they're too, you know, the university shouldn't be teaching that because the Republican lawmaker disagrees with that.
I don't doubt that that's true. I'm just not up to speed on what's happening in Wisconsin there. But it's true that that all kinds of discussions are being held as to whether the states should cut their money. Some of them are hard up for tax money, and others are politicizing. But I think each issue has to be discussed separately, and I think without regard to ideology. So that's what we're for.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have time for Ryan in Eau Claire. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, as a former student of the UW system and someone who works in admissions for higher education in the UW system, one of my least favorable experiences I had as a student was at a small UW school in western Wisconsin, and And as a part of the orientation program, they bought disposable cameras for all the new incoming freshmen. And one of the things that the disposable cameras had American flags on the cardboard, you know, on the, that encased the disposable camera. And the person who was in charge of the orientation program had the intern remove all the cardboard from the cameras because, you know, not everyone who was going to school there was from America.
Oh.
And it was made me so angry that, you know, I traveled abroad. No one worried about pulling down the flags in France when I was on their institutions or on their in their buildings. You know, there it just seems like there's such a, you know, like you've been saying, that we're so worried about offending people that we forget about where we're coming from.
Well, it's more than that. I think the universities are overlaid with a general disdain for the Western tradition, and America in particular, that the flag becomes more and more like a symbol of the America they're rejecting. It's got a status somewhat similar to the Confederate flag to blacks, that the average liberal student thinks it's offensive to have an American flag because it represents all those other people he disagrees with.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Leo, thanks a lot. It's good talking to you again, and have a good launch party tonight for MindingTheCampus.com.
Joy, thank you.
Yeah, John Leo, editor of MindingTheCampus.com, also a syndicated columnist, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. We thank him for being with us, and we thank you for listening along. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the program and for on-air production. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. Or you can listen online, WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.